Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to The Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome in to another episode of The Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross. This is episode 266. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80 grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clay. Chris, how's it going, bud?
It's going pretty good. Another outfield episode. Been on the outfield a while, but obviously there are so many of them. Just did two prospect episodes, and we're going to talk some dynasty outfielders. And obviously at the top, the position is really elite. So I'm looking forward to talking that. But yeah, I'm doing well. Otherwise, hope you are too.
Yeah, everyone else is, basically most people in the country are probably watching the Taylor Swift show, the Bills and Chiefs there. I just love how angry people get whenever the camera goes to Taylor Swift. Like it's her fault. I find that absolutely hilarious. But everyone else watching football, you and I are recording a baseball podcast because it is baseball draft season. It's always dynasty season. And we're finishing up our outfield section of our Dynasty and Prospect Ranking Series with the Outfield Dynasty Ranks. Like Chris mentioned, we did have two prospect episodes. First one with Chris Welsh, and then the second one was on Friday. So check out both of those episodes, 264 and 265. And we will be doing just Dynasty MLB today. Obviously, we'll have the prospects mixed into our rankings, obviously, but we will not talk about them as we already did the two episodes of that. But before we get into the episode, usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I'm at AirCross04. Show is at Toolshed Pod. If you enjoy the podcast, please rate and review. And make sure to check out both of our personal platforms, ddynastydugout.com and toolshedfantasy.com for more work from each of us, including all of our Dynasty Prospect and FYPD rankings. And you also can find Chris on RotoBallers and me at RotoBaller as well and FTN. So a lot of good stuff, a lot of content pumping out from both of us this time of year and all year round. But Chris, let's start it off with our let's go our top two. Do you want to go top 10 or do you want to go top 25? Let's go.
You need top 10 first. It's stacked.
Yeah,
so
yeah, top 10 is pretty straightforward. But what's your top 10 here?
All right. No surprise. Ronald Acuna Jr., Julio Rodriguez, Corbin Carroll, Fernando Tatis Jr., and Juan Soto. 6 through 10 is Kyle Tucker, Mookie Betts, Yordan Alvarez, and Aaron Judge, which I think comprises like the top 12 overall in my rankings.
Yep, pretty much. Yeah, let's see. Mine, yeah, I want to see where the top 10 lies. It's probably right at that same range. Yes, yeah, so my number, oops, I have my spreadsheet sorted incredibly weirdly right now. Let's hold on. Let me get it back to the way it should be. There we go. Yeah, so this is 10 of my top 11 for me. The only one in here that's not, actually, wait a minute. No, 10 of my top 13, excuse me. The only ones in there mixed in are Shohei Ohtani, Bobby Witt Jr., and Ellie De La Cruz for me. That's are not outfielders. But I have the exact same top 10 in a slightly different order from Chris, but same top three, Acuna, J-Rod, Carroll. Then I go Tucker at 4, Tatis at 5, Soto at 6, Yordan 7, Mookie 8, Robert 9, and Aaron Judge 10. But we don't need to really discuss Acuna, J-Rod, Carroll. Like they're elite. They're always going to be elite. We know that. But the first kind of interesting one here is Juan Soto, going to be in Yankee Stadium this year after the trade back in December from the Padres. And it's funny, you saw two different kind of thought processes come out here. People that were looking at just thinking, all right, look at his spray chart and then look at it at Yankee Stadium. You'd think that there would be a lot more home runs there. But then people were pointing out the expected homer metrics on Savant. We actually had him going down in Yankee Stadium, but I've never fully thought that those expected homer metrics looked always right. Like for me, I look at Soto, and obviously you have to factor in weather and wall height and all of this and that, sure. But at the same time, you got to imagine that a player like Soto with his power that he has, this we're talking about a 13% barrel, 93.2 average EV, 55.3% hard hit rates. The last two of those were the career high marks for him. Put him in Yankee Stadium with that short porch. I'm not saying he's going to hit 50, but I think after hitting 35 last year, I think 40 plus is definitely in the cards. So, Chris, like, how are you valuing the Soto move from San Diego to Yankee Stadium?
It should only benefit him. He was in a great lineup, obviously, in San Diego, but the ballpark is not the best there. Yankee Stadium, much more of a hitter's park, especially from the left side, as would have that short porch. I think that at the same time, I really feel like this just makes him play up a bit. San Diego surprisingly wasn't competitive the last several years, and now he should be on a team that's contending, I'll say, the Yankees. And they haven't in the past, but he's also playing in a contract year. And ultimately, while he got a $31.5 million in ARB salary for this year, he's playing for the mega contract. And I think that there's certainly a chance that he breaks out in the, not say break out, but has a massive season. One, because it's a contract year. And two, I think that the contention status, per se, will allow him to step up his game a bit. And you have to wonder, what was the situation like? Things just didn't seem right in San Diego, considering all the stars they had, to not be able to put together. I don't know. Maybe I'm reading too much into something like that. But ultimately, I think that Soto really benefits from a lot of different ways with being with the Yankees. And so I'm excited to see that home run factor for left-handed hitters over the last 3 years in Yankee Stadium is second best in the major leagues behind only Great American Ballparks, 123 park factor there. And for San Diego, that park factor was 84, which ranked 26th among all MLB parks. So it's a big boost at park-wise for a left-handed bat, especially from a home run perspective. We know Soto's going to get on base a ton. He's going to take his walks, base. You look at like batting average on balls in play or damage done like Wobakon. I think that he really will benefit in several opportunities from being with the Yankees. And while it's hard to push him up much further, he could surpass like Tatis or Carroll for me this year, and it wouldn't be surprising.
Yeah. You know, obviously he's not getting up to like Acuna levels or anything like that, but yeah, he probably moves up a couple spots if anything, but he's going to be elite regardless. But as a Red Sox fan, I hated this move, obviously, but as a fantasy analyst and as a guy that has a lot of Soto shares in dynasty leagues, I love it because, yeah, this only can help. Like you can't sit here and tell me, I don't care what the expected homer metrics for Soto say. And it's funny, I was looking at the all 30 ballparks, and obviously he had 35 home runs last year. And for expected, he was tied with Yankee Stadium, was tied with a few other parks for second worst, only Pittsburgh had lower at 26. Like, you can't tell me Yankee Stadium like that. That just doesn't add up to me. Let's look at the spray chart. That is more indicative, I think. Look at the quality of contact. But he was, you know, driving the ball in the air. He's still not a, you know, huge launch angle guy, but you get that ground ball right down a little bit. But I think you could see 40 plus home runs from Soto this year, 100 plus runs scored, especially if Judge is healthy for the full year as well. Probably have Judge hitting right behind him. That would be huge. And if you get a healthy Rizzo back in the lineup, you get Glaber there. DJ, Verdugo are still decent bats. Guys around him are going to be pretty damn good. So yeah, I think this could be his best full season ever, not counting that shortened 2020 year. But yeah, definitely a slight little bump up for Juan Soto. That's really the only name we think. Maybe we can talk a little bit of Luis Robert here too, Chris. This is a guy coming off his best year of his career. He's been really good when he's been on the field, but this was also the first year where he really played the majority of the season with a career best 595 plate appearances after 401 in 2022 and 296 in 2021. And you saw him finally get up over that 30 home run mark, 38 home runs, scored 90, drove in 80, added 20 steals with a 264, 315, 542 slash line. Was really one of the lone bright spots, maybe the only bright spot on that Chicago White Sox team this past year. Obviously, the metrics are really good across the board. He is aggressive. We know that. Low walk rate. K rate went up to about 29%, but great quality of contact metrics. He's a good athlete. But Chris, are you trusting him? Would you, if you had him right now, would you hold him? Like, all right, this is the beginning of a long stretch of top 10 caliber seasons from him. Or are you still worried about the injury problems he's had in the past? And would you use the big 2023 year he just had to maybe entertain selling high in dynasty leagues?
Yeah, if you can sell, then I most likely am. It's been obviously a long history of injuries and being able to stay on the field. And 2023 was the first time he had played over 100 games in his career. And he hit 145, which was exceptional, but do I trust him to repeat that again? I'm not so sure. He mashed 38 home runs, 20 stolen bases, but it also came with a 315 OBP and a 264 batting average. So all those things are certainly red flags in the profile, especially given that his chase rate is one of the highest in all of baseball. The contact rate is one of the worst in all of baseball. Strikes out a ton, doesn't walk. All these things kind of factor in, and Robert doesn't hit the ball all that hard. He makes the most of his angles. Like, his barrel rate's elite because he hits the ball at ideal launch angles. The average EV was 44th percentile. Hard hit rate was 58th percentile. So I do have my concerns about Robert's just ability to stay on the field. And if he does, can the performance repeat? Obviously an elite season, but I think you can trade him and you can probably get like a first round caliber player, maybe. And maybe we're looking at a top 20 asset would be a little closer. But if you can get a top 20, 25 asset, I might entertain that because I do think there's some downside here. And I think that his price is probably at peak.
That's fair. I'm so torn with Robert because obviously there's immense talent here. And we saw it. And hell, maybe there's even more here because How many games did he play this past year? Like 140 something? 145. Okay, that's pretty close. But you know, you give him another 50 plate appearances or something like that, he could have gone like 42, 25 or something like that. He's got the speed to steal more than he did. But yeah, there's a lot of, you look at the metrics here in Savant, there's like a lot of red and a lot of blue there with the, you know, chase, the whiff, the K, the walk. And if there was a durability slider, that'd probably be in the blue as well on Savant. So as much as I love Luis Robert, I wouldn't sell just to get rid of him. But if you did get a good offer, let's say, I'm just going to use outfielders here from our outfield rankings. Let's say, because I have Robert 9, Chris has him 10. Let's say you were to get an Arozarena. We both have about 5-ish spots below him. Arozarena plus, I don't know, let's say Arozarena plus like a Jazz Chisholm, Chris. Would you do that?
Yeah, but Jazz is just risky. We'll talk a little maybe about him. Arozarena is as safe as they get, so you know that he's like a 2020 lock for sure. Yeah, that's, I don't know. That's certainly interesting to think about, but
yeah,
it's getting close to fair value.
Yeah, I think it's what, something like that or better is what I'd be looking at. Some guy that's only 5, 6, 7 spots below Robert in outfield rankings, like Arozarena is, and then another pretty solid piece as well. Like maybe get a 2-for-1 or something like that. But that, I don't know if you're going to get a 1-for-1 for him. Just, I don't know if the two people I have right around him, I don't know if you're getting a 1-for-1 from the Mookie Betts owner or the Aaron Judge manager. Those are the two guys around him for me. People that roster them probably aren't giving them to you for Robert. And then you look down next to people down. I don't know if you accept that 1-for-1. So it's a weird place to be with Robert now. Maybe it can't hurt throw on the block to see what offers you get. I definitely would at least entertain that for sure. All right, let's go on to our 11 through 25. For me, that is Wyatt Langford in the 11th spot already. And he's already in my top 25 overall. Michael Harris, the second. 12, Jordan Walker, 13, Randy Arozarena, 14, Jackson Churio, 15, 16 through 20, I got Evan Carter, Mike Trout, Riley Green, Nolan Jones, and Cody Bellinger. 21 through 25, Adelis Garcia, Christian Yelich, Jazz Chisholm Jr., Brian Reynolds, and Josh Lowe. Chris, who you got?
All right, so starting off at 11 with Michael Harris, the second. Followed by Wyatt Langford, Jackson Churio, Adelis Garcia, and Randy Arozarena at 15. 16 through 20 would be Mike Trout, Evan Carter, Cody Bellinger, Brian Reynolds, and Christian Yelich. And then 21 through 25 being Dylan Cruz, Jason Dominguez, Jordan Walker, Jazz Chisholm Jr., and Riley Green to round it out.
All right, let's start with Michael Harris. You have him 11. I have him 12. And he's a guy that we've mentioned before, and I remember especially you mentioned this, Chris, how people were, when he was struggling to start the year last year, like people were asking if they should cut him, and more so in redraft formats, or asking if he was a bust, stuff like that. And yeah, of course, he had a rough start to the year, but this is still a guy that finished the year really strong. And you look at the end of the year, there was three guys with an XBA or 80th percentile or better rank in XBA, hard hit rate, and sprint speed. J-Rod, Tatis, Trout, and Michael Harris, all four of them being outfielders. You know, he was really good, and he really heated up and finished overall with an 18-homer, 20-steal season, which has basically mirrored his 2022 performance, slash 293, 331, 477. And obviously, Chris, we both still have him high, and then I'm guessing we still have him in your top 25 overall, as I do as well. I think it's a no-brainer here. I don't know if you still can buy low on Michael Harris, but I think if someone's not valuing him as a top 25 guy, I think he's a great value buy right now because I don't think everyone has him there, and I think he absolutely should be there because look at what he's done, the power-speed blend, the ability to hit for average. Yeah, he's aggressive, doesn't walk much. I get it. That's a little wart of his game. And people will point out, oh, he's hitting in the 9 spot. Yeah, he was. But the 9 spot in Atlanta is still better than like the 4 or 5 spot in most other lineups. And Harris still had 76 runs scored and 57 RBI in just 539 plate appearances out of that 9 spot, which is still pretty solid. Yeah, I think he's definitely a buy right now in Dynasty Leagues.
Yeah, he was hurt the first couple of months of the year. And I don't think people are willing to acknowledge that, which is where they're saying he was terrible. But dude was had a back injury and a hyperextended knee. There was a lot going on that said that he should have been playing bad. And then you look at what he did, like after he got healthy in June, and he just took off. Like we're looking at, I think, a pretty elite batting average profile with some solid power and speed too. And I think he could be a 30-30 guy. It wouldn't shock me at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, from June 1st on, he hit 335, 552 slug. I know he didn't, the OBP is going to be lower because he doesn't walk a ton, as you mentioned, but 16 home runs, 15 stolen bases over 400 plate appearances. The juice is there. He's got the speed. The upside is certainly 30-30, and the batting average showed that he's capable of putting up really good numbers. And I think it honestly benefits him from being aggressive. I don't think he's one of those hitters that would benefit from being passive and walking more, but so many balls in play, so many line drives, he's got the speed. He's going to run higher BABIP, so if you want to flag him for BABIP, then that's fine, but I think that this profile is naturally going to run higher BABIPs due to the line drives, the ability to hit the ball hard, and also with his sprint speed too. So no, it's a great profile. I do have him top 25 overall. And if you can somehow invest in him still, I would gladly do so.
Yeah, I was trying to find a tweet I had about his kind of tale of two seasons. And his 650 plate appearance pace from June 7th on was 102 runs, 26 home runs, 80 RBI, and 24 steals. And yeah, with a 335, 360, 552 slash line. This is after a 163, 246, 244 slash line while he's hurt, like Chris mentioned, through his first 138 plate appearances. So, yeah, absolutely a buy, no doubt about it. Moving on to another guy that I think is a very strong buy right now, and that's Jordan Walker of the St. Louis Cardinals, who he had a fine rookie year. It wasn't bad. People are making out like it was bad, but 276, 342, 445 doesn't jump off the page at you. 16 home runs and 7 steals. Again, fine, but people expected more given the preseason hype that was there. But look at how he finished the season. Slash 339, 392, 545 from August 8th on with 6 doubles, 5 home runs, and a 19.2% K rate in 125 plate appearances. And another thing that was really positive too was that he, as the season wore on, you look at his rolling ground ball rates, and they were going down, as and he was better than league average ground ball, meaning lower than league average, which is great because there was him hitting too many ground balls in the first half. So Jordan Walker, like people really remember how high I was on Jordan Walker this time last year and into preseason. I'm just as high then as I am now. Yeah, I have to drop him a little bit down my rankings, sure, but I still have him in the top 35, top 40 overall. I still think this is a potential like top 20 overall player. And I think we're in for a really big year from Jordan Walker. Like, I wouldn't surprise me if he hit 30 home runs, around 10 steals, and he scored plenty of runs in RBI as well. Like, I think that player is still there. He showed that at the end of the season, and I'm still like 100% buy on Jordan Walker right now. Chris, where are you at on him?
Yeah, it's funny to hear the chatter like he had a terrible year. He was 20 years old to start the season when he made the roster out of camp. Posted a 116 WRC plus. He was literally like 16% better than league average as a 20-year-old. And yeah, he doesn't provide the most with defense, but he did a lot of respectable things. You mentioned it got better as the year went on. He's got power. He's got some speed too. Like I think he has sneaky stolen base potential to give you 10 to 15 bags, which is pretty significant from this profile that could hit 30 home runs if all clicks and not kill you with batting average, give you a respectable OBP. No, I do think Walker is a really good investment, and people just soured on him so quickly. It's interesting to see, but no, I still firmly believe in Jordan Walker.
Yeah, like people are making it out like he had a terrible rookie year. When the guy hit 276, and yeah, he was demoted, which I still don't fully understand why he was demoted during that time. Yeah, he was slumping at the time, but heck, he's a rookie. That happens. There's peaks and valleys with any rookie. But yeah, I still think that he's going to be a top 20 player. Like we'll do these episodes again next year, and we're probably talking about him as a top 10 outfielder, top 20 overall player. I firmly believe that. So strong buy for Jordan Walker. Next one here, Jazz Chisholm, who, let's see, where do we have him? I had him 23rd, you have him 24th. So obviously he's another very polarizing player here, and really one of the more polarizing players in all of baseball, I think, because everyone loves Jazz. He's a lot of fun, the blue hair, he's always smiling. He's a guy you root for, right? But same time, if you roster him in fantasy, it's been very frustrating, very inconsistent. And we've seen the power speed blend from him. He had 18 home runs, 23 steals back in 2021 in 507 plate appearances. And then if you look at over his last 624 plate appearances, 33 home runs and 34 steals. However, that's combined over 2022 and 2023. So obviously another player where durability is a question right here. And even outside of that, Chris, let's take the durability off the table right now. There's another massive red flag that I think gets overlooked because of the durability. The fact that his plate discipline metrics are not very good. You've seen zone contact dip every year of his career, whiff rate jump every year of his career. Zone contact is well below league average. Same with his contact rate overall. And he had a 35.7% whiff rate last year. So that's concerning as well. So I don't know. He's a guy where if I don't know what I would do with him. I wouldn't be targeting him right now. Even though his value might be the lowest it could ever be, but this guy could also see his value crater. Maybe he's the next Buxton. I don't know. I don't want to say that. I hate saying that, but it's a possibility, Chris. So how are you valuing him right now with everything, you know, all the good and the bad in the profile?
It's a very boom or bust profile. It's certainly risky. You mentioned Buxton, which is interesting just from the standpoint of durability, the performance being up and down. It's quite interesting. His launch angles are terrible. While his on the surface 11-degree launch angle looks awesome, his sweet spot percentage was one of the worst in all of baseball at 25% last year. That's not, it means you're not hitting in the ideal spots at all. The whiff rate, terrible, fourth percentile. He striking out over 30% of the time last year, not walking much. The only thing that he really does well is he hits the ball pretty hard when he makes contact, and he's got speed too, but you have to be on base to steal. We're looking at a 304 OBP last year, which is right in line with his career. 304 OBP. His career average 245. I don't know. I think Jazz is pretty close to being completely out of the top 100. I almost moved him out in this ranking update, but I just couldn't get myself to do it. So I think he's pretty close to taking a big tumble if things don't get better in 2024. We can dream on the upside all day, but you have to be on the field and you have to perform when you're on the field. And I think there's so many red flags that kind of weigh above the power and speed. That's a lot of fun. 19 homers and 22 steals in 383 plate appearances is phenomenal, but with the other issues, it balances out some.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's hard to invest in this profile with the durability issues, with the contact issues. Yeah, it's fun, but fun doesn't always win you fantasy titles. That's why it's probably better off to go out and go after a guy like Christian Yelich, who's boring now, but he produces. He's consistent. Or Brian Reynolds. He's, you know, probably the most boring top 100 guy there is, and he's on the Pirates, but the dude produces. And again, neither one of them have sexy profiles anymore. Yes, you need to get production, and Jazz gives you it when he's on the field. But yeah, I think there's a better chance he's post 125, 150 in our rankings the next year than he is top 50. He could be top 25 if he can curb the contact issues, stay in the field. Yeah, he could be top 25 or so. He could be up near where like Rosarena, Walker, Harris, all those guys are now. But I think there's a better chance that he goes the opposite way, just given all the red flags in the profile. But, you know, what's Deacon? I know we didn't put him on the sheet here, but I feel like we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about Mike Trout right now in Dynasty Leagues. You know, both still have him top 20, me 17, you 16, right in the same spot with Evan Carter. But if you were a contending team, Chris, obviously if you're a rebuilding team, it doesn't really make a lot of sense to go after Mike Trout, who is now, is he 33 now or still 32? I think he's 32. Yeah. But if you're a contending team, would you go after Mike Trout, who obviously is still Mike Trout when he's on the field? But this is a guy that's had even fewer plate appearances than Jazz Chisholm over the last 3 years, looking at 146, 499, and 362 each of the last 3 years. And he has that chronic back issue now that's probably always going to flare up from time to time, cause an IL stint here and there. Would you even be looking to trade for Mike Trout, given, you know, what you believe the cost is going to be to try to acquire him?
He's a really tough one. He's obviously very talented when he's on the field, but the profile has actually changed some over time. And I'm not sure that we see the elite Trout. He's going to hit for power. There's no questioning that. Still elite barrel rates, hard hit, average EV, etc. But he's striking out so much more. The contact rate has trended in the wrong direction for the last few years, which does concern me a bit. So I'm not super in on him. Like, when you're making zone contact 76% of the time, that's not the Mike Trout we knew that used to post like 88 and 89%. And the overall contact rate being around 70% also the last 2 years is a little concerning, considering in his prime, he was an 80% type contact guy. He's still elite sprint speed, but that doesn't mean anything. He's not stealing. You're going to get basically nothing there. You're hoping that he hits 280 with 30 bombs, which would be really nice with a good OBP. There's value in that, but you're also hoping he gives you 400 plate appearances, which is doable, but how much do you have to pay? I guess that's my question mark, and it depends on the cost for him.
Yeah, it's really discouraging to see him whiffing more in zone now. The whiff rate has jumped a ton. Still not chasing that much, which is good to see, but for the longest time, he was like right below 20% whiff. Then the last 3 years, that's jumped up to 27.5, 30.2, and 29.3%. And yeah, and we mentioned sprint speed all the time. It's fun to talk about, but doesn't always equate to speed, obviously. And this is our steals, I should say. And this is a perfect example. 96 percentile sprint speed and a guy that's giving you 2-1 and two steals the last 3 years. So five combined. Yeah, Mike Trout, I don't know. I still have him top 100. You have to at this point. You know, he's even 500 play appearances of Trout is a top 100 guy. But yeah, I'd go after some other guys. If I was looking to acquire a veteran outfielder, I'd probably go after some guys that are a more realistic price tag. Probably a bit lower price tag than I would try to go after Mike Trout. Love the guy, but that chronic back issue is really concerning, and I don't think that's going to get better as he gets into his mid-30s either. But all right, let's move on to the next set of our rankings here. We'll go 26 through 50. Chris, who you got?
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
All right, so 26 through 50. We'll start at 26 being Nolan Jones, followed by Josh Lowe, Nick Castellanos, Kyle Schwarber, Walker Jenkins, 31 through 35, James Wood, Roman Anthony, Spencer Steer, Cedric Mullins, and C.S. Suzuki, 36 through 40, Pete Crow Armstrong, Chaz McCormick, Lane Thomas, Chase DeLauder, and Ian Happ, 41 through 50. We'll just go all the way through with James Outman, T.J. Friedel, George Springer, Tommy Edmond, Colton Kowser, Eloy Jimenez, Lars Nootbaar, Max Clark, Masataka Yoshida, and Jorge Soler.
All right, so mine, 26 to 30, Jaron Duran, Dylan Cruz, Jason Dominguez, C.S. Suzuki, Kyle Schwarber, 31 through 40. We got Pete Crow Armstrong, George Springer, Cedric Mullins, Chase DeLauder, James Wood, Lane Thomas, Eloy Jimenez, Chaz McCormick, Masataka Yoshida, and Kerry Carpenter. 41 through 50, Ian Happ, Lars Nootbaar, Teoscar Hernandez, James Outman, Nick Castellanos, Walker Jenkins, Anthony Santander, Tyler O'Neill, Christopher Morel, and Colton Kowser at 50 spot. All right, let's dig into Eloy Jimenez here, Chris. Maybe if Jazz isn't the most polarizing, then I think Eloy probably is. he probably takes the cake. At least now, but people are not off of the Buxton train, but you know, people realize this is what Buxton is. So I think Eloy's kind of taken over the realm of most polarizing, most frustrating young player to roster. And he's not that young anymore. Yeah, he's still 27, but we're not talking like he's 23 anymore. And he's a guy that just, again, cannot stay healthy. And we haven't even seen 500 plate appearances from him. Last year, he had 489 plate appearances, which I believe was a career high, right? No, that's the second most in his career behind his rookie year in 2019, where he had 504 plate appearances. And it wasn't like he was that great last year either. 18 home runs in 120 games. He was fine, 272, 317, 441, but definitely underperforming what we were hoping to get out of him. We thought 30-plus home runs. The average probably right in the realm where we thought he'd be, but the power just wasn't there overall. And quality of contact was still fine. 9.3% barrel, 90.9 EV, and 46.7% hard hit rate. But those were all down from previous years. Chris, he's a hard one. He might be the hardest one to rank now. So I still want to believe, because all the upside in the world, former top prospect, huge raw power, but it hasn't panned out yet. Is it ever going to, Chris? Are you still holding out hope that Eloy can still be a high-impact outfielder for fantasy?
It's a good question, and I guess the other question, is he going to play enough outfield, or is he going to be moved to full-time DH in hopes that he can stay healthy DHing? Because there are those question marks about, in some leagues, I think he is going to be only DH. He just played 14 games, in the outfield last year, but still struggled to stay healthy. Only 489 plate appearances, which was the most he has had in his career, at least since 2019. So he went over 500 in 2019. But since then, 489 was the highest by far. So he did say more healthy. The performance was not there, though. Just 18 home runs, hit 272, a 317 OBP. Eloy, we talked about Jazz's low sweet spot. Eloy's right there with him. He chases, he whiffs, which is interesting because I feel like at this point in Eloy's career, he's just selling out way too much. I feel like he really is feeling the pressure to try to be that elite bat. But throughout his career, the whiff rates have not been good. The chase rate has not been great. The power, sure, it's been there in the past. That's taken a step back, especially the barrel rate, just due to the amount of ground balls and even pop-ups. Still hits the ball hard. I think that we're hoping that Eloy can just be healthy for 550 plate appearances this year. He hits 25 home runs and he has 275. I'd say it's a win, but how valuable is that out of the DH-only spot? Hopefully he becomes outfield eligible. We'll see. I'm not sure that they're comfortable doing that. So yeah, his value has tanked a lot, and my hopes of him rebounding are pretty slim.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I'm right there with you. It's getting harder and harder to continue to believe in Eloy Jimenez being an impact guy. I mean, it's probably what he is at this point. You'll probably have stretches from him, whether it be a couple weeks, month or two, where he's one of the hottest hitters on the planet. We've already seen that from him over the years at times. But those will be few and far between, given all the injuries, the aggressive nature of his low walk rate, high whiff rate, high chase rate. Yeah, it just there's too many red flags here to really, unless I can get him for dirt cheap. I don't really know if I want to invest in Eloy Jimenez right now. But a guy I am looking to invest in, because he's probably becoming one of the more underrated players in baseball, and that's James Outman from the Los Angeles Dodgers. A guy that quietly put together a 23 home run, 16 steal year in 2023, with 86 runs scored as well. 248, 353, 437 slash line. A lot of good in this profile, Chris. Yeah, he's another guy that has a high whiff rate, high K rate. At the same time, walked at a 12% clip there. Had one of the better sweet spot percentages in all of baseball. Doesn't chase too much either. Solid barrel rate too. You know, I'm not sure if there's like a ton more upside from here. I don't think he's like 30, 25 or something like that. But a guy that could be like a 25, 15 threat, you look at the metrics and they support that. And it doesn't matter if he's hitting lower in the Dodgers lineup. Again, hitting bottom third in the Dodgers lineup isn't necessarily a death wish for hitters, as it might be with like Kansas City or Pittsburgh or some team like that. So I think what we saw from him is very legit, and I don't see why he can't continue it moving forward. So strong buy for James Altman right now.
Yeah, he's easily a heavy investment for me at this point. I think that he's still being underrated. I see him going really low, like in rankings, not so much in like redraft leagues, but dynasty rankings, he's for some reason really low. I don't quite understand that. Hits the ball at elite angles all the time. He hits the ball hard. His ninth percentile EV was 105. Doesn't chase often. He's going to walk a lot. He's going to be on base a good bit. Yeah, the contact rates aren't the best, but I do believe in the player, the power speed that he offers. He plays, and people have asked, like, is he going to platoon? The splits aren't bad. He plays a really strong center field, and the Dodgers really don't have that many talented outfielders, which is wild to say. They've got Teoscar Hernandez. He's not going to play center. They've got Jason Hayward. He's not going to play center. They've got several guys, but Altman's just better at the end of the day. I genuinely believe that. And so I have zero questions about James Altman playing every day. And to me, he's an easy investment.
Yeah, 100% agree. All right, let's go over to my Boston Red Sox here with Tyler O'Neill, newest acquisition coming over from the St. Louis Cardinals about a month and a half ago. I am very much in right now on Tyler O'Neill. I've always been a Tyler O'Neill guy. And yeah, the last couple of years have been rough after that 34 homer, 15 steal year he had in 2021, where he also slashed 286, 352, 560. He hasn't even come close to those numbers or those plate appearances. Last 2 years combined, he has 649 plate appearances, 23 home runs and 19 steals over that time. But the average cratered down to about 230, OBP barely over 300. But at the same time, Chris, while the quality of contact has gone down a bit from that big 2021, he's become a better hitter over that time. The K rate has gone down about 5-6%. Walk rate's up about 3-3.5% over the last couple of years. Zone contact was the best rate of his career this past year. Career best whiff rate as well. Chase rate's always been, you know, in the 25-27% range, which is right around league average, or even slightly better than league average. So if he can just stay healthy, again, this common theme here, Chris, with guys just needing to stay healthy, and O'Neill absolutely fits that mold, but he's still only 28. I like the ballpark fit for him, and maybe he needed a change of scenery. There was reports of him not getting along with Marmol and falling out of favor there, so maybe this fresh start for him will do him some good, and maybe this is the Red Sox fan in me being optimistic, but I see a lot of good here for a nice bounce back year from O'Neill. But what are your thoughts?
Yeah, as long as he plays every day, I think there's certainly a chance of that. And you have to think, Phil, the mental aspect, too, of your manager having rub against you. Those things matter. He was injured in 2022, which was a down year after the 34 home run 2021 season. I think he needed the move out of St. Louis. I do think it's a really good fit. He's going to hit a ton of doubles off the wall, plus home runs as well in Fenway Park. So I'm certainly believing in a bounce back here. The barrel rate's extremely good with O'Neill, even in a down year last year, very solid. And honestly, like, the averages don't really reflect his contact rates at all. You can see typically, like, guys with low averages, they normally run, you know, lower contacts. O'Neill last year had an 81.5% zone contact, right around MLB average, which is, to me, says he's better than the 231 that he hit last year. So I'd expect that to bounce back, especially with how hard he hits the ball. I think the average does tick up. And the whiff rate, the overall contact, yeah, I mean, it was a little worse than MLB average, but he's not a major contact hitter. I think O'Neill is a 260 type hitter that can still bang 30 home runs, and he's going to steal some bags. I think he's a good investment as long as he plays every day. And I am pretty excited about the move. He's only 28 years old. So, you know, there's still plenty of time for him to get back in the groove and get going.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Let's pick a player each outside or in our 26 to 50 range that could be top 15 at this position by the end of the 2024 season. What name comes to mind for you, Chris?
So if I was just betting on somebody that could really make that jump, I want to say a prospect, but I'm not going to go there. Just, you know, I've looked at guys like Nolan Jones and Josh Lowe just from the power speed, but there's certainly some risk here. I will say this is an interesting range to look at and say, like, okay, I do believe this guy can make that big jump. And, you know, this may sound, and this may be a completely wrong answer because I don't believe that Lane Thomas is going to get better. But I do believe that if Lane Thomas produces just similar results to what he did last year, then he's probably valued much higher. Do I think top 15? Probably not, because it's just a pretty loaded group. But I do think Thomas improves his stock a lot just by repeating his season.
I hope he doesn't go up, as I traded him to you in Highlander. Though I think it was you a did. Good deal.
Yeah,
people tweet at us, I traded Chris Lane Thomas, and I get back, yeah, Yiner Diaz. I think that's pretty fair. People let us know what you think of that deal. I needed the catcher. Chris needed an outfield. I think it was a pretty solid deal for both teams there. Both kept them in this portion of the – there's multiple keeper cycles in the Highlander Dynasty Invitational, so we both kept them in this latest part of it. So he'll be on our teams in 2024 once we trade them again. But, yeah, I like Lane Thomas. He was hard to give up, but I think he's – where he is at now, I think is a fair expectation for him moving forward. And I think he's still pretty underrated, so I think he's still a decent Dynasty buy. So I don't think people realize like how good he was last year. But the guy I'm going to go with is my number 26 guy, but I'm a bit higher on him. People call me a homer all they want. I know I have the metrics here to back it up. That's Jarren Duran. Yeah, I think he's going to be a nice breakout this year. We already saw a bit of a breakout from him this past year. Had 8 homers and 24 steals in 362 plate appearances. Hit 295 with a 346 OBP and 482 slug. And yeah, he did slow down a bit near the end of the season, but still overall had a 46.3% hard hit rate, 96 percentile sprint speed, 91.2 zone contact rate, and a 78.6% contact rate. He's probably going to lead off for Boston more often than not, and in front of Devers and Yoshida and Cassis. So I think it's obviously a huge breakout this year as well. So you could see 90-plus runs. Even 100 wouldn't surprise me if he plays a whole year. I think you're looking at right around like a 15-ish homer guy, 30-plus steals, and maybe even more than that. He could flirt with 40 and give you at least 60-plus RBI as well, because Red Sox lineup looks pretty solid right now. Not a juggernaut like Atlanta or Texas, but still a pretty solid lineup top to bottom. Yeah, I like Jarren Duran a lot to break out this year. Let's pick one more guy here, Chris, outside of our top 50 that we think could jump into our top 25 by the end of the year. I'll go first on this one, and I'm going Parker Meadows here, a guy that we did talk about during our outfield prospect episode, so I won't go like super deep into him here, but basically the power speed blend is there to go 20 plus. He's always been an above average or better runner. And I think there's above average pop in the profile as well. He had 3 home runs, 8 steals this past year in 145 plate appearances for Detroit. And he's got to be starting every day there, assuming he doesn't go into a massive slump. That lineup could be at least not terrible this year if they get Riley Green back full time. Torque, obviously, I think that could be a decent enough lineup. Kerry Carpenter, super underrated as well. So, yeah, I mean, maybe he won't be the highest average hitter, but I think he can be like 260-ish with a decent OBP. He's always walked at a pretty solid clip. So if you're getting 260 with 20 plus, I think that's a top 100 overall guy. I think that's what we could be looking at here with Parker Meadows. So he's my breakout pick for this section of our rankings. Chris, who's your guy?
Yeah, it's going to be your homer pick. I thought you were going to take Jared Kelnick, but I really believe that Kelnick is in for a big year in Atlanta. No bias. No bias at all as someone who likes the Braves, but I really do believe that free of all the expectations, Kelnick is now the seventh best hitter in Atlanta's lineup with no pressure. He's 24 years old. He's still young, and I still believe the best days are ahead of him. He hit the ball really hard last year. He hits the ball at ideal launch angles consistently. He walks at a reasonable clip. Yeah, while there's questions about the strikeouts and the whiff, I understand that. I also believe that it doesn't take much improvement to see Kelnick be a really impressive power and speed threat. So I'm buying that he could have a big bounce back with Atlanta this year and potentially be a 2020 type bat with a respectable average. He doesn't need to be high-end average, but I think he can probably hit you 265, 270 if he gives you 2020. There's a lot of value in that, especially in that lineup. He's going to score a lot of runs. He should have a lot of RBI opportunities. I'm excited to see what Jared Kelnick does in a new home, but he is my pick to really vault up.
Solid pick. I did think about it. No, I definitely agree. People don't put enough thought into the immense pressure put on him. Like, he was billed as the savior for Seattle right away. And that's a lot to put on any prospect, no matter how talented they are. But you got to remember, like, he was a top prospect for a reason and still very young. Change of scenery, getting into a great lineup. You know, like you said, he's probably the seventh best guy in that lineup. That lineup is absolutely loaded top to bottom. So, yeah, I definitely think he's going to be a nice bounce back play this year as well. All right, let's run out the show with some listener questions here real quick. Some of these we already hit on, so we might skip over a couple of them, but this is more of a strategy question here. It seems like if you aren't getting 2 to 3 outfielders in your first 5 to 6 picks, you're stuck in a glob. I guess this kind of turns into a question about what we just talked about. Who are some outfielders outside the top 25-30 with a chance to jump in out of that glob into the top 15 outfield ranks? So we did already hit on that, but kind of on that first sentence, yeah, it does get globby pretty quick. And I don't know if globby is a word, probably not, but I just made it one because it fits this, even in redraft, is I want to get outfield early, and then maybe I wait a little bit, and then these kind of that glob section of these rankings, maybe I'm going after middle infielders or pitching or whatever it may be, a catcher or something like that. So, yeah, I think that feel is there that gets very globby outside of the top 15 or so outfielders. But, Chris, would you agree with that?
Yeah, no, I certainly agree with that sentiment there.
All right, so next question here. Is Gavin Lux and this one's asking about James Outman as well, but also about Gavin Lux. Is Gavin Lux and James Outman big time sleepers on a stacked Dodgers team, knowing they'll be everyday options at their respective positions? So we already talked about Lux in the previous episode, I'm pretty sure. So I think we both have him as a nice little bounce back this year, good value play. And then Outman, we just talked about as well. And number two question from this person, everyone's in love with Wyatt Langford. Is he making this team, and what's his ceiling floor in terms of overall value? We talked about him in our prospect episode with Chris Welsh, part one of that. But yeah, I think, is he making the team though? I don't know. I was leaning yes. Now I'm on the fence. I don't know. Chris, do you think he makes a team out of spring training?
I don't know. I think there's a chance, but I'm not sure they may go the route where they want to look in the extension for him, long-term extension, which could, you know, certainly lead to him making the team. But either way, I say it's better chance than not with a decent spring training showing, but we shall see.
Yeah, no, he's at this point, if I had to lean one way, I would say no, but I'm like pretty close to 50-50. But if he's not up in spring on opening day, he's gonna be up very early, and I think he can still have a massive year. There's a lot of other prospect questions here. I'll just blanketly say that, you know, go check out, we talked about a lot of these guys in our two prospect episodes, 264, 265. So go back and check out those. There's a question here about Rainer Arias. We talked about him previously, Bryce Eldridge, and a lot of other prospects. So go check out those episodes if you want to hear us talk about them. Next question here. How do you envision Teoscar doing in LA this year? He's another interesting one, Chris. How do you value Teoscar this year?
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
He certainly has his flaws, but I still think the value, and maybe the value probably jumps back a little bit with him in that LA lineup, but I thought that his value had gone down a little bit too much. Just given that he's still performed, he's had the last 3 years, 32, 25, 26 home runs. He's not a zero in stolen bases either. Gave seven last year. And he hit 258, which is fine. It's not going to kill you. And the whiff rate's a little higher than you like to see. Chase is. He's aggressive. That's just the nature of his game. But there is power. And being in that Dodgers lineup, I do think his value gets a little bit of a boost. I'm like not running out and getting them based on the trade, but I think there is some value to be had there for sure.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I think he's fine now. I think Teoscar's best years are behind him, but the last 2 years he's been fairly consistent. 25 home runs, handful of steals, hitting about 260, lower OBP. And he's never been a big walk rate guy, 5-6% there, but quality of contact is still pretty damn good. 14% barrel rate, 49% hard hit rate this past year. He's been over a 91 mile an hour EV each the last 6 years. Yes, I think he can still be a top 100 player overall. Another 25-30 home runs, 5-7 steals, average you can live with. Gets a little bump down in OBP formats. Still a pretty solid player overall. 31 years old. I think he's still got a few more years of being a top 100 overall player or so. All right, next question here. Trying to skip through the prospect ones. This one about there's some of the Reds outfielders. This person says, in my opinion, the Reds outfield has a few that don't get talked about much with Steer, Friedel, and Benson. Very curious to hear your opinions on those three. Yeah, no, I think you're pretty spot on. Patty Boy, who's this person's name on Twitter. I like all three of those guys, at least the amounts. Especially Steer is a guy I have ranked the highest of these three. And I just realized that I forgot to put outfield eligibility on my sheet for him. So he's outfield eligible now. He would be right behind Seiya Suzuki, so right in like the outfield 30 range. For me, I have him 90th overall in my top 500 dynasty rankings. He's a guy that he's not flashy whatsoever, but the profile all around is pretty solid. He's got multiple position eligibility, first, third, and outfield in most leagues. And a guy that can hit you 260 plus, 20 plus, 10 plus, well, having that eligibility at all those spots, which is definitely valuable in today's day and age. It doesn't strike out too much. Good approach to plate, 10% walk rate, 21% K rate. Gotta like that. He's not a great defender, but whatever. He's a move all around, keep his bat in the lineup, even with all the options they have. So yeah, he's a fun one. But out of these three, Chris, like, how do you value Steer, Friedel, and Benson? And I think Friedel, he's the one where, I don't know, he's probably the hardest one for me to rank here. I'm not sure if I fully believe in what he did last year. But he's not a fluke either. But how are you ranking these three, especially Friedel?
Yeah, I just tweeted about Friedel the other day, just being extremely undervalued, in my opinion. He's absolutely a lefty masher as a left-handed bat. He had 963 OPS against lefties, which is always interesting. The skill set, I think it plays really well in Great American Ballpark, maybe not so much other places. But he had 18 home runs, 27 stolen bases last year. I don't see why he shouldn't continue to be like a 15-25 guy at minimum each year. I think that he's just a little bit undervalued, but it's one of those sneaky bats that does return really good value for the next several years. It's a fun profile, and I think he's very valuable. And obviously, Benson has a lot of upside too. I like Benson if he gets regular playing time. No, I think that these guys are certainly good values, and Steer seems like the more quote boring one of the group. Maybe Friedel. Benson's probably the most exciting upside, but yeah, I like all three of those guys, to be honest.
Yeah, I do too. And you got Friedel's profile is so weird. Like, you just look at his percentile rankings. He's either outside of walk rate, where he's right in the middle. For everything else, he's either in the top 25% or the bottom 25%. There's nothing in the middle. It's a very weird profile. And as Chris mentioned, like a lefty masher as a lefty. So weird, but hey, it works. And he's probably going to lead off a good amount for them as well. Yeah, I like all three of these guys a decent bit here. See, next one here, Benintendi, Will Benson, and DeLucas, Johnny DeLucas usage. Benson, in terms of just like how much they play this year, Cincinnati's tough. I think Benson should get like 500 plus plate appearances. We shall see. Benny should be starting regularly, but he's not that. Is Benny the most boring player in baseball now? I don't know. He's definitely running for that. he's fine. He's not terrible, but doesn't really give you much fantasy impact either. This is a guy that's had over 500 plate appearances each of the last 3 years and not really done a whole lot with it. He's on the White Sox. Like he's going to play regularly. But again, I don't think he's anybody you want outside of deeper leagues. I think his ADP is probably like in the 400 plus range, if I had to guess. But DeLuca here, I want to look at the Rays depth chart because he's the real intriguing one here, I think. Obviously, Benson's intriguing too. But so right now, outfield, obviously, Randy Rosarena is locked in there. Josh Lowe, for the most part, locked in. And then they got Jose Siri as well. Hale Ramirez, who's played a little bit of outfield too. They have DeLuca on the opening day roster, but maybe more so in a platoon on the short side of a platoon. So I don't know. How often do you think we see DeLuca this year, Chris? Do you think he plays enough to make an impact for fantasy?
I certainly hope so. The Rays are just weird with what they do. And I know if you look at like roster resource right now, he's not projected to start in a short side platoon with Jose Siri. No, not with Jose Siri. Probably in the right field spot with Josh Lowe. But DeLuca's actually really good glove. So yeah. I wonder if that would allow him to receive more at-bats. I just think at the end of the day, like we don't know how the Rays are going to use these guys. And I think it warrants a better chance than not that he could become a semi-regular and provide really good value. I believe in the bat. There's no questioning the bat, in my opinion. It's just, where's the playing time come from? And looking at the depth chart, a Rosarena is going to play every day. You can pretty much count on that. I think Josh Lowe is going to play pretty much every day. Jose Siri, the questionable one. Richie Palacios. There's at-bats available for DeLuca. And I think that he could certainly find a spot here with this team. But we'll see how it shakes out. Man, it's... I think that if anybody tells you they know what the Rays are going to do, then they're lying to you.
Yep, 100%. Yeah, and in general, I like DeLuca. I think he's always been pretty underrated. He's been one of those a little bit older prospects. But if he does get a chance to play regularly, I think he could be a decent, not a great one, but a decent fantasy contributor. I think he's definitely a good buy right now because the price tag is pretty low probably. And people don't think he's going to play. Don't think what he did in the minors was legit because he was older for the level. Whatever it may be, I think he's a good value right now in Dynasty Leagues. Next one here, can you give Jesus Sanchez a compliment? Thank you. He's got good power. If you want me to compliment him, I don't know. Do you like Jesus Sanchez at all, Chris? So every time I try to get back in on Jesus Sanchez, he flops. So at this point, I'm not like fully out, but it's again like the you got to show me something phase before I buy back in at all.
Yeah, I don't really see much to get excited about. He's got power. Like he can go on surges where he does provide decent power. He's not going to face lefties at all. He's also has to stay healthy. That's a big thing in the profile. I don't know. I think he's a fine source of power, but there's plenty of fine sources of power out there, in my opinion. So he's not somebody that I'm like jumping at, especially he's going to run low OBPs. He hasn't really shown the ability to post much power, in my opinion, for how hard he hits the ball. But I don't know. I think he's okay. He's not like I'm going out to get or anything.
Yeah. Quality contact is above average, but lower launch angle, higher ground ball rate around 50%. Yeah. And he hasn't made more than he had a career high 402 plate appearances last year. Still hasn't even met the 15 home run threshold. Yeah. I guess deeper leagues, he's fine, but that's where he's at right now. I don't think there's a lot more to add to him. Next few questions are about either players we talked about already or prospects. So we got one more here to round out from Gopher Vol asking, I am curious where you have Kjerstad and is he better off being traded to another team? Kjerstad just, I think he was like 51, 52, 53 in my outfield rankings. Chris, where do you have Kjerstad in yours?
Where is he? Let me look.
While you look, I'm pulling up the profile here. In terms of being to a different team, I don't think so. He's a lefty in Camden, not a righty that's deal with that deep left field dimensions out there. Quality of contact with him has always been pretty damn good. And we saw that in the major leagues. Yeah, it was a very small sample size, only 20 batted balls, but he barreled four of them. EV was 92.3 on average, 55% hard hit rate. Now, he's another guy that's a little bit more on the aggressive side. Probably not going to be a huge average guy, huge OBP guy, but average could be 255, 260, probably lower OBP, like 320, 310, something like that. But this could be a 25-plus homer bat and a guy that could drive in a decent amount of runs, probably a hit, I don't know, fifth, sixth or so in that Baltimore lineup, which is going to be a pretty damn good lineup. I want to see where Roster Resource has him projected for the lineup. They have him. Why am I not seeing him? They don't have him to start at all right now, which is.
Probably have him in AAA, I'd guess.
Yeah, I could see. Yeah, I get. Yeah, they probably do. Yeah, he's not even on the bench. But, yeah, that's odd. They do have Mullins, Hayes. They could put him at DH, but they got Mountcastle back. But there's a lot of guys that have some injury concerns here. So even if he's not on the opening day roster, he's probably up pretty soon. And, yeah, I think he's a annual 25 homer bat, hitting 260 or so, and probably driving in 80 plus runs, given where he'll probably hit in this Baltimore lineup when he is back up. So I like your said, I think he's a solid buy.
Yeah, he doesn't need a trade. There's certainly a spot on this team for him, whether it be a corner outfield, whether it be DH, whether it be at first base. There's plenty of opportunities. He should have made my list. He's UT only on my spreadsheet, thanks to I just pull everything from Fantrax, and he didn't obviously came up and he didn't play enough to qualify any position, but I have him ahead of Eloy. So he would have been 45th. Actually, excuse me. 45th of among outfielders. If I had him in there, I believe in the contact skills. He had an 88% zone contact last year in AAA. He is aggressive. He chases a little bit too much, but the power is certainly there. And no, he's a really solid buy. And I don't think he gets traded anywhere. What I've been told is that the Orioles want to keep that young core together. They have no interest in trading any of them to try to get like a star player or anything. They just really believe in their player development, and they believe that those guys will be a core part of their future. And while Kerstad is probably not one of their untouchables, like Basalo is, like Jackson Holliday is, I still think he sticks on this team.
Yeah, they really have no need to trade a guy like Kerstad. Maybe if they want to trade from some, they still got a lot of good prospects that haven't even debuted yet. So maybe if they want to trade from that, I could totally see that. But yeah, I think Kerstad's here, and I think he's maybe not a top 100 guy, but maybe a guy that's like a top 125 to 150 guy. I think that's a fair range and potential outcome for him long term. But that is going to wrap us up and wrap up the outfield position. A lot of fun breaking down this always deep and tantalizing position. A lot of intriguing and polarizing names here that we discussed over the last three episodes. So again, if you missed the prospect portions, go back and check out those two episodes as well. We have a couple other episodes this week that are non-rankings focused. But then next week, we'll have three episodes for pitcher, a couple good guests lined up for those as well. But until then, everyone take care. Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.